split sermon given to us by Mr. Royden Morgan.
Howdy, all. Chris said he wanted to run up here, and I'm thinking I wanted to run up there too, because my father-in-law sometimes will say, he comes up to me between the two splits and goes, "How much time you need?" And I'm like, you know, people like Chris and Dad, you know, they can frame things and move and flow and up and down and all around. And I'm like, I'm not a cut and paster, even though I might look like a cut and paster, but anyway. Anyway, they were both gracious, and anyway, and I always get nervous when that happens. It always invariably happens. My brother-in-law will come up and say, "How much time do you need?" And I'm like, "Not enough time. Let's get down to work." Anyway, I'm going to take a little bit of a different tack today between, you know, actually the days of unleavened bread and Pentecost. I want to look at going on to perfection a little bit, and I want to look at something based on that concept that we as people, as Chris kind of brought out today, should be trying to grow and emulate behaviors that we see in Jesus Christ. And I wanted to kind of narrow down on a broad principle, if I can. Julie and I were talking the other day. I suppose this is the beginning, so if you're trying to keep track. Julie and I were talking the other day about a situation that we'd both gone through. And Julie was saying to me that maybe I wasn't completely right in the situation. Now, Julie wasn't saying that I was wrong. Julie would never do that. She would never do that. But she suggested to me that if more information came to light, or the situation evolved into something else, I might need to apologize or may need to relook at the situation. And initially I'm like, I didn't do anything wrong here. You know, sometimes I know I did something wrong, and I'm not trying to be proud, but I usually go, "Yeah, I was wrong, I apologize." I like to try and get it really quickly, because I can't stand the nights of stress. If I've done something wrong, I kind of get in there very quickly and say, "I did wrong." I don't want to dwell on it, because otherwise it just eats me alive. But anyway, but I noticed as I get older, heading towards 50, and basically, I suppose I should say this. I should be becoming more converted, right, as I get older. But as I get older, I've noticed this tendency to be more stubborn. And wanting to do it my own way. Some of you older people here, am I thinking the right thing, or are you just thinking, no, completely unconverted? But anyway, bear with me. No, I just noticed that, you know, and some of it's based on past experiences. You know, I look at it and I go, that's a cat, that's a cat, that's a cat, right? For a use of an analogy. Past experiences, doing things certain ways, you kind of learn things, you learn routes, right? You learn routes and you go, this is how it is, because, and I'm not just being cocky about it, there are certain formulas. You know, you look at it and you go, this is what happens when this happens. You know, if you turn the pot on, you walk away, it's going to boil over, right? So I'm not trying to beat myself down too much. I don't want to do that in front of you anyway. But I just noticed this concept. Now, I know, and I've talked about this a lot, there are times we should be unmovable, which is when it comes to holding to the truth. You know, that's not one of these occasions that we should be more flexible. Leaning to one's understanding is something different than this. Leaning to one's understanding is something different from this. It's kind of interesting. The Bible has multiple examples of this, and it's the volume is huge when you start looking at leaning to one's own understanding. A huge part of Scripture comes from this, and that's why I want to talk about it, because it's something that we all need to be on our guard against, which is leaning to one's own understanding, stubbornness, pride. That all kind of feeds into this concept. When I was thinking about this, I'm thinking about the Bible, and I was thinking about this topic. I was thinking, you know, You could look at the Bible and think, if it didn't have a purpose, you could say it's a book of gossip. And I'm not going to get struck down for that. Because it's a lot of different stories, isn't it? It's a lot of different stories about a lot of different individuals and what they did. And I've heard the old saying, and I'm sure you've heard it, and it goes like this. It goes, that guy there, he only learns through the school of hard knocks. Right? We've all heard that. Maybe you say it a little bit differently, and probably I should say it more differently. But we learn through the experiences that we go through. Well, I thought a lot about that statement, and I'm thinking, you know what? If you look at the Bible, and we look at 1 Corinthians 10, God teaches through examples. And that's why this isn't a book of gossip. This is a book that actually uses examples to teach us how to behave, if you will. And that's what God uses. And that's why I want to look at just three examples today. And the three examples are about three kings of Judah. And they all had problems. Now, if you look at the kings of Judah, you could say, well, let's just pick three evil kings. And you'd go, this is going to be easy to prove. But these kings were considered to some degree good kings and did lots of good things. So it's not like you can just say, evil guy, evil behavior, and he's just out of it, and that's easy to spot. No, these guys did things like a Christian. They did good things, and they had a weakness, and they had a problem, and they had a problem when it came to the situation that I'm trying to narrow in on, which is leaning to one's own understanding. The first example I want to go to is Asa. Now you go, who's Asa? You know, well, I haven't thought about Asa a lot, but Asa was the grandson of Rehoboam. So he's one, you know, he's about three generations away from Solomon. His father was Abijah. Abijah reigned only 3 years. King states that he walked in the sins of his father. And that kind of might explain why he only reigned 3 years. And so onto this scene came Asa. Asa became king at an early age, and he reigned for 41 years. King states that he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord as David his father. So once again, I'm showing you, this isn't just, you can't just make a blanket judgment. This individual did a lot of things right. He took down the strange altars, and he commanded Judah to seek the Lord and keep his commandments. And as a result, early in his reign, he had a degree of peace. It probably went for like 10 or 12 years circa. Later in his reign, and that kind of gets more exciting, this individual called Zerah, he was an Ethiopian. And he came up against Asa in a battle. And he had 1 million men. And to give you some kind of sense of that, on D-Day, they believed 160,000 troops landed on the beaches of Normandy on that day. This individual, Zerah, came up with 1 million men. I mean, go watch the movie Zulu. And you think about that and you go, this is way bigger than D-Day. And he came up and he wanted to fight Asa. And Asa, believe it or not, actually had 580,000 troops. So he actually had you'd say, okay, it was a 50-50 shot, right, if he was the underdog. But Asa, he handled the situation in a godly way. And let's go to 2 Chronicles 14, 11 through 12. Let's go to 2 Chronicles 14, 11 through 12. And I want to read from verse 11. And it says, and Asa cried out to the Lord his God and said, Lord, it is nothing for you to help. Whether with many or with those who have no power, help us. O Lord, our God, for we rest on you or trust in you. And in your name we go against the multitude. O Lord, you are our God. Do not let man prevail against you. So the Lord struck the Ethiopian, this million-man army, before Asa and Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. So once again, right here we see that Asa, he acknowledged God, he acknowledged God's power, and more than this, he trusted in him to vanquish this king, and he did. We see that Asa acknowledged what God was, that he was all-powerful, and then he trusted him. He trusted him, and he put this army in God's hands, into God's arena, and God actually gave him the victory in this battle. The prophet, how do you say this name? The prophet Azariah would tell Asa after this battle. Hear me, O Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while you are with me. If you seek me, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. So it's kind of a little warning after this. Well, as we know, and as Asa got older, like I said at the beginning, as Asa got older, he faced another conflict. And believe it or not, from what I can gather from all the commentaries, and they seem fairly ironclad, joking, right? But this event actually occurred just 1 year later. And in this time, Asa was faced with the northern king, the northern Israel king, I think his name was Baasha, and he wanted to have a fight with Asa. This time, though, Asa didn't turn to God. He didn't acknowledge God. He kind of thought, I'm going to do this my own way. And so what he had an ally in the king of Syria. And he paid a whole lot of gold and a whole lot of silver out of the temple treasury for this individual, you know, which is basically statescraft, right? Statescraft is politically, I've got this ally here, I've got this ally here, and I'm going to work this out through my own means rather than looking to God for deliverance. As a result of this, Asa had hostility from the northern tribes for the rest of his life. The peace that he had early in his reign kind of disappeared, and he faced this situation. And Asa, believe it or not, and as we know, well, I shouldn't say believe it or not, but God left in him no doubt why this hostility continued. And the answer came from God through another prophet. And this is found in 2 Chronicles 16, 7 through 9. And this time this prophet says, and this is a different prophet, his name is Hanani, there you go. And at that time, Hanani, verse 7, the seer came to Asa the king of Judah and said to him, because you have relied on the king of Assyria and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Assyria has escaped from your hand. Were the Ethiopians, see God brings them back, were the Ethiopians and the Libyans not a huge army and very many chariots and horsemen, yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hands. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. In this you have done foolishly. Therefore, from now on, you shall have wars. So basically, you don't want a prophet to come in to see you unless you've done something good, right? And in this case, and no doubt was he left, it was put in his mind by this prophet, he had done the wrong thing. It's not funny, I suppose that's a term I use, it's not funny, but God puts great stock in those who trust him and don't trust in themselves. He does amazing things for those that acknowledge him. And Asa had seen the power of a million-man army being vanquished by God. And so then to actually lean to human reasoning and using money to get himself out of a smaller predicament seems bizarre. But that's how we as individuals sometimes do things. Like Chris said, sometimes we do the right, and then on another occasion, we do the wrong. But the rule is, when you've been told by a prophet you've done wrong, and we've got the rule of Nathan and David, what do? You fall down on your face. You start saying, I did the wrong thing. I need to be contrite. I need to seek, well, as Christian, this would be a time for one of Chris's action words, which would be, help, please God, forgive me now. You know, that would be what would happen here. But Asa, let's look at verse 10. He didn't react like David. He acted in a incorrect manner. Let's see verse 10. Then Asa was angry with the seer, or the prophet, and put him in prison, for he was enraged at him because of this. And Asa oppressed some of the people at this time. Wrong approach. Once again, you look at it and you go, he's moving further into leaning to his own understanding. Once again, he should have cried uncle, right? We all know who our uncle is. That's you. You crying out saying, I did the wrong thing. But it goes further than that. See, it seemed like now something that may have been a smaller problem has developed into a bigger problem. Verse 12, and it shows once again how if you lean to your own understanding and you hold to that line, it can be very problematic. And it says in verse 12, and in the 39th year of his reign, Asa became diseased in his feet, and his malady was severe, yet in his disease he did not seek the Lord but physicians. And this is not about going to doctors or anything. This is an ongoing problem, and it's about, I'm not going to acknowledge God, I'm not going to seek God, I'm going to work it out on my own way, or, as I try to suggest at the beginning, to lean to one's own understanding. Was his life cut short? That's the question you could ask, good speculative question, right? Was his life cut short? Because it says, it seems like God's saying, hey, you know, if he had sought me, he had prayed the prayer of Hezekiah, if you will, maybe God would have forgiven him because he did, like I said earlier on, a lot of good things. But he didn't. And it seems like he kind of faded away. He faded away. As we know, God sees things very differently than us. This story is not given to us like as a final judgment of Asa, but it's an example of not leaning to one's own understanding. It shows the importance of acknowledging and trusting God, and that's the way to deliverance, rather than saying, okay, I got a bad situation here. I'm not going to do what's godly. I'm going to try and muddle my way through it. And that's kind of what Asa did. Once again, this is not about just gossiping about Asa. This is an example, once again, that should teach us to have a certain approach. Let's go to the next one. Let's go to Uzziah. Uzziah, and he's obviously after Asa. Uzziah was 16. So once again, teens go, you know, it's rough to be a teen. This guy's 16. He's 16. I can remember when I was 16. I'm like, just got out of diapers. I'm kidding. They were Depends. No, but seriously, when I was 16, you look at the mantles that some of these people had on them, and that shows the world was very different. You know, in the times, and you look at Hebrews, sometimes it's just lined up. This is the way it is. This is your life, and you have no choice. You're living this certain way. Here's Uzziah, he's 16. He became king. He reigned for 52 years. During his reign, Judah was very prosperous. In fact, some suggest almost as prosperous as Solomon and Jehoshaphat. He had a great army. I think he had like 380,000 men. He had a number of successful campaigns against the Philistines and other enemies of God. He was a great builder, an architect. Uzziah's reputation as a leader was known all down as far as Egypt. This individual, if you want to say leadership skills, he had lots of leadership skills and he had good management. King states, and so once again, this is not just me talking about Uzziah. King states that he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, and as long as he sought the Lord, God made him prosper. You know what? I'm not going to bring up a certain name that I always want to go to when I talk about the Health Wealth Gospel. I've made a commitment not to bring his name up. But in this case, you look at this situation, you go, if I do this, I'm going to get this. Right? I mean, that's not big math, right? I'm thinking, I want that. And once again, we know Israel was offered that too, but Israel goes like, yeah, I'm sick of doing good. And then they go, why did the blessings go? But Uzziah was made this promise by God that if he sought God, he would prosper. Let's go to 2 Chronicles. This is where the problem develops. And the problem didn't start out at the beginning. It came in later on. Once again, as we get older, we start thinking and leaning to our own understanding. Let's go to Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 26. I'm going to stay in Chronicles all day. And hopefully that won't be a long day. 2 Chronicles 26, 16 through 21. And it says, but when he was strong, okay, there's a key word right there. But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. For he transgressed against the Lord his God by entering the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. So Azariah, the priest, went after him. With him were 80 priests of the Lord, valiant men. And they withstood King Uzziah and said to him, It is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord, but for the priests, the sons of Aaron, who are consecrated to burn incense. Get out of the sanctuary, for you have trespassed. You have no honor from the Lord God. Continuing in 19, then Uzziah became furious. Once again, he's already told he was wrong. Next key is, don't get furious about it, right? When you're wrong, don't get, I'm going to get some here. The Uzziah became furious, and he had a censer in his hand to burn incense. So he's like not backing down. Once again, the law says that only the priests can offer incense in the temple, the sons of Aaron. And he's going in there with his censer, and he wants to burn incense. And while he was angry with the priests, in 19, leprosy broke out on his forehead before the priests in the house of the Lord beside the incense altar. And Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked at him, and there on his forehead he was leprous. So they thrust him out of the place. Indeed, also he also hurried to get out, because the Lord had struck him. King Uzziah was a leper until the day of his death. He dwelt in an isolated house because he was a leper, for he was cut off from the house of the Lord. And you go, what happened here? What happened here? And I'll tell you a little story. It happened last night. And Chris knows a little bit about me. I kind of, do you want to grab my coat? I think I'll get cursed for doing that. But I fancy myself as a bit of a butcher. You know, I love butchering meats, and Chris and I talk about meats regularly. 90% of all of our conversations are about meats. But anyway, and there's a Meat Man show now on the Food Network. It's a great show. Everybody should partake. But anyway, I was in there, and I got my cleaver out. And I love using my cleaver. I got my set of, I don't know, high-density Japanese 4,000-degree cutters. And I'm in there, and my wife's walking in. And, you know, my wife knows not to bother me when I'm butchering. But Julie was thinking, he's not doing that right, but she just thought it. And I'm just in there, and I'm cutting up brisket. And I'm really happy about my brisket, and I'm cutting it up. Hence the finger. I got the finger lopped off, took a big chunk off the side, because I was kind of proud about, I wasn't saying I was proud. I was just thinking to myself, man, I'm good at cutting this meat. And then I was also thinking, it's been a while since I cut myself, and you know what? I'm pretty proud about that too. And boom, bleeding. But then, you know what Julie said? The way to fix this and stop this from bleeding is, you know what she said? Burn it. Burn it. And I'm thinking, burn the wound. You know what, I love my wife and I trust her as a doctor, but she's not going to burn the wound with silver nitrate, chemicals. But she's right. She's right. That's what I should have done. I didn't do it. And now it's weeping and bleeding and I'm crying like a big baby. I mean, today I was like standing over the sink and she's banding it, you know, doing stuff to it. I don't know. And I'm like, I'm feeling woozy. I'm like, man, I'm a big baby. But anyway. The point is, I suppose, in telling that story is, that little story in conjunction with this kind of proves where I'm feeling pretty good. Uzziah had prosperity. He was the king. He had wealth. He had all these things going for him. Doesn't sound like Lucifer, does it? And what did he then decide to do? What did Lucifer decide to do? I'm going up and I want to be worshipped. Once again, unlawful. And Uzziah, I don't know how he got there. Uzziah might have said in his own mind, I want to do this. I want to worship God in the way that I want to worship God. And it says clearly, it says he became strong and he was lifted up. And that's once again, destruction came. Once again, this is not a beat down on Uzziah. It's to show how any individual on any given day, if he starts not thinking correctly or leaning to his own understanding, it can end up very badly. And once again, I think it's horrific that here is this man that did so many good things. Once again, this is not his eternal judgment. He was barred from the house of God. He was barred from his people because he thought, I'm above the law. And that's in essence what happened here. He was above the law. God showed him, and I want to read this statement. God showed him, no one is above the law. Once again, God gives us this story to remind us to make sure our thoughts and our desires are lawful and not shaped by pride. And once again, that's the whole ball of wax, really. Anyway, I'll stop there. Let's go to Uzziah. Uzziah. We just did Uzziah. Let's go to Jost. I can't even say his name. These guys' names are tough after a while. Josiah. Josiah. And you guys, okay, the teens thought, man, we've got a bad rap here today. 16-year-olds. Josiah, now I'm going to hit the preteens. Josiah came to rule when he was 8 years old. He didn't even know what nappies were. He's still up in his pack, if we were in modern day, right? He was still, I mean, Stephanie's looking at me, what is he saying? I'm saying, you know, they're still, kids today at eight are like swaddled. You know, they're like held up here. 8 years old. This guy's like Samuel. I mean, look at the life of Samuel. Once again, I think we've become soft in this world. Samuel got taken up to the house of the God and left for godly purposes. A young man, 8 years old. And then at 16, he was, this is what was said of him at age 16. The king says, he did what was right in the sight of the Lord and walked in all the ways of his father David. He did not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. And let's read a bit more. Kings further states, there was no king like him before or after who turned to the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses. I mean, what a statement. What a statement. I mean, you look at Josiah. I look at Josiah and I go, no one like him. He brought Judah out of paganism. He brought him back into the worship of God. And all of his days, Judah was obedient to God in the way that God determined. Because obviously there were still sins going on. But the whole approach, he cut down every kind of pagan thing and burned up every kind of pagan priest. I mean, this guy just cleaned house, but he did it because he had this zeal for the Lord. At age 39, so he's still a young guy, you know, he's younger than me and Chris. He did something at age 39 that, once again, it's a lesson for us. It cost him his life. And it cost him his life. Let's go to 2 Chronicles, this is the last story. 2 Chronicles 35, verse 20. And it says in 2 Chronicles 35, 20, after all this, when Josiah had prepared the temple, they say that the Passover in Scripture, the Passover that he kept, there was no Passover like it since the time of Samuel. I mean, I think he gave out, I'm trying to remember some facts, 30,000 sheep to the people of Israel for them to keep the Passover. This guy was super generous. I mean, it's just an individual that you would say, I want that written on my gravestone. And that's what he was like. But then he made a mistake. And it cost him his life. Let's read in verse 20. After all this, when Josiah had prepared the temple, Necho, king of Egypt, came up to fight against, and this is a tough word for me, I'm going to take my glasses off to get it, Carchemish, I think, by the Euphrates. He's a Babylonian. And Josiah went out against him, but he sent messages to him saying, this is Necho. Necho sent messages saying to him, what have I to do with you, king of Judah? I have not come up against you this day, but against the house which I have war. For God commanded me to make haste, refrain from meddling with God. Who is with me, lest he destroy you? Let me read that again. For God commanded me to make haste, refrain from meddling with God, who is with me, that's Necho, lest he destroy you, Josiah. Continuing, nevertheless, Josiah would not turn his face from him, but disguised himself so that he might fight with him. He did not heed the words of Necho. That'd be one thing, right? From the mouth of God. It's kind of interesting, really, when you think about it. Here's an Egyptian pharaoh being told something. You'd think, well, how come it didn't come through a prophet? Well, it didn't. It came through Necho, but nowhere in this area of Scripture, and not a lot is said there, did Josiah question that this did come from God. And in fact, he disguised himself thinking, okay, I won't go up, you know, it's kind of like, I'm not going to put on my memorabilia and go up there. I am King Josiah from Judah. No, he's kind of cloaked. He's like Darth Vader. Not Darth Vader. Let me just say, like, what do they call them? The drones, the clones. He's like a clone. You just go, there's a billion guys up here, and I don't know which one's Josiah, right? And he thought, I'll disguise myself because I want to get a piece of this for some reason. He wanted to go up and fight, but he knew... It doesn't question at all the fact that these words came from the mouth of God. So he came up to fight in the valley of Megiddo. And the archers shot King Josiah. And the king said to his servants, take me away, for I am severely wounded. His servants therefore took him out of the chariot and put him in the second chariot that he had. And they brought him down to Jerusalem. So he died. What a kind of a flat ending, right? It's kind of... In a way, it's a flat ending. Once again, you can't look at things as we would base it because God looks at things completely different. God looks at events, and God looks at the totality of a man's life and not one situation. Because otherwise, if we looked at some of the situations that we find in here, we go, there's no way. I mean, one of my fun games with my wife is like, there's no way you can make it. And then I'll do something sinful, and then she goes, there's no way you can make it. Anyway, it's just a fun game. Don't play it. But anyway, what is interesting is one can speculate. And, you know, I read a bunch of stuff on this. And a lot of it's in this book called Kingdom of Priests. And it's by Merrill. It was a textbook back in school. And some of the commentaries will go into the fact that they say that, you know, here is Josiah. He had this, he was allied with this Babylonian king, and that's why he went to fight. You know, so what? The real point here is he decided to go against what God had told him to do through this Pharaoh Necho. What can be said about this example of Josiah? Josiah did one thing wrong here. He failed to heed the warning of God. That's what happened. He did what he wanted to do. The result was it cost him his life. Back to us. Back to us as we come down to a close here. Leaning to one's own understanding can really get us in a lot of trouble. Like I said, these three examples are not like a hit down on these individuals. They are there for us to learn from. And like I said, I look at so many of the things that you see about them. They did so many things right, but then they had this weakness. And this weakness doesn't completely define them. In some cases, it costs them their life. They became lepers. But, you know, I'm sure that they will still be in the kingdom. That's not the question here. The question is how this weakness, this leaning to one's own understanding, can be detrimental. I believe these examples are relevant for us today. For we have all received, like, the favor of God. We walk and live in God's presence. You could say, you know, we're first fruits. We are prosperous. We have life within us through God's Holy Spirit. We could get really excited about that. But on the other hand, we've got to be careful that we don't lose perspective. That doesn't mean then that we can do the things these individuals did. Put it another way in the vernacular. Remember these three kings. And what can happen if you get too big for your boots? And, you know, obviously it's a vernacular, and I'm not trying to criticize them once again. I'm just looking at the examples. My finger tells me in this tiny little way how quickly we can get out of hand and lean to our own understanding. I'm not talking about wisdom and experience because, once again, the older members in the church are there to help us, to guide us, to teach us. But you can get too cocky, to be blunt. 3 points to conclude. Short points. What should be our approach in the light of these three examples? First one, remember our life is like a vapor. Acknowledge God, like Asa. Acknowledge God in the first battle. Acknowledge God and trust in him for deliverance. And don't rely on self and human reasoning. Second one, this is pertinent to Uzziah. Be small in your own sight, or in your own sight. Be childlike when it comes to keeping the commandments. Be like a little moron. I mean, a moron's not a good one. Like a little kid. Like, you know, go here, go here. When he says, moron's very bad, now everybody's laughing at me. What I'm saying is keep it simple when it keeps to the commandments. If God says the Sabbath's 24 hours, don't cut in and say, I'm going to keep 20 and I'm doing God a favor. Right? I mean, to me, that's what it's about. Keeping it simple. Being childlike. Keeping the commandments. Tell me how Uzziah could not have known that it was wrong for him to do that. Once again, pride got in the road and boom, down he went. Don't think you're above the law just because you're favored of God. Once again, God's not going to cut us slack in the sense that he's going to say, oh, I love Royden and he's doing all those bad things and that's cool. Obviously, God's not going to talk like that, but that's where you can... How does pride do that to you? Somehow, someday, you end up going from, that's not right to do, God's going to... I heard a statement, how did it go in those days? It used to go like this, God's going to wink at that. God's not going to wink at transgression. Final point. Josiah, remember our purpose is to fill God's purpose. That's kind of what Josiah lost at that point. God's purpose, not our own. Listen to the warnings of God and heed them.